everyone. Thanks for tuning in. We're doing podcast number 39, Jason Sloan Radio Show, powered up by the old school Bad Fish Outdoors Media Network. Don't know where those guys are or what they're doing now, but we've got Mr. Kevin Cochran on tonight, muskie guide extraordinaire from northern Minnesota. How you doing, Kev?
Good, Jay. You know, I wore my my Bad Fish Outdoors sweatshirt last night. You know, to pay homage to the musky anglers before me. So it was pretty cool.
You probably had some young ladies making advances at you too, I would imagine.
Yeah, my girlfriend really doesn't like that when I wear it out to the bars. So, you know, I have to wear it just in the boat around my clients. But yeah, you are correct.
Cool. So you're a little late calling in tonight. What's going on?
Yeah, you know, today's my day off. So I'm actually flying to Disneyland tomorrow. I'm going to hang out with my two nephews and my sister and her family and my parents. But yeah, I mean, I slept in today. I fished until maybe like 1:30 this morning. And then I slept until, I don't know, I must have at least slept until like 1 today. So, sleep is just not something that I get a lot of, in the summer. And then when I do, it tends to, I tend to just sleep a really, really long time, and today was one of those days. But yeah, I'm here. So
good deal. Yeah. Awesome. So yeah, let's get right into it. So let's I want to let the people know kind of how your summer's been treating you, kind of an overall look at your summer chasing muskies over there.
Yeah, the trolling bite right out of the gate was really tough. It was slow for some reason. You know, I think there was one, I was keeping track of how many fish we actually caught. And you know, there was a time where I was like one for 12. You know, so it was really tough. We were getting bites, but it was just really hard to hook up with fish and just get them to the boat. You know, and I think that just comes with you know, more and more pressure on the legs, less fish, and some of the stock legs definitely less fish. You know, now the casting bite is obviously, we're well into August, and the casting bite has definitely been casting more or less since the first week of July. And with that being said, the casting bite for me has been really good. You know, I fish cast, Bemidji, Plainview, and Jeannette. So those are my main three lakes, and I do go and I fish other lakes as well, but those are my primary, lakes that I fish right now. And, you know, the casting bite it's there. All of July was awesome. I mean, me and my clients, we smashed these fish and we were catching, you know, at least one a day, pretty much all of July. And up until Sunday. And then, you know, we experienced a lot of heat Monday through Thursday of this past week. So, and that being said, I was doing really well, like shallow. I was catching fish shallow up in the sand and the rocks. And once that heat finally hit us, water temps increased, and then you know, it was a really tough bite, and all the shallow water fish moved out. They just weren't there. So, you know, for the most part, the casting bite for me has been really good. And it's been pretty typical, like casting, like sunrise, sunset, and peak moon phase times. But with the heat, and then also, you and I talked earlier, you said you talked to Jeff about, like, the fact that there hasn't been any wind, you know, and that's definitely hurt our casting bite here. You know, I fish a lot of clear water lakes, cast specifically, and if you don't have wind out there, it's tough, you know, it's, and we had, you know, no wind and a lot of heat, and that's tough fishing. So, but you know, I'm looking forward. I'm have my sights set on next week, and I've got a few days off. I'm flying to Florida for 5 days, and when I return, I'm going to be back in the game, and it's going to be right around the full moon of August. So, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. So have you turned, you know, I know that, one of the times I was filming with you over there and we had this extreme heat and we basically had to go at night to get anything to go. Have you been doing anything after dark?
You know, I have, we fished this morning until like 1:30 ish. And it really hasn't paid off. You know, it's like that first hour, you know, right after sunset's been good, but then literally nothing after that. And the water temps, they do go down a little bit, but the fish activity, they're still, the past 5 days, I haven't done well casting, even on the break lines and deeper weeds and deeper structure in general. It's been a really tough bite. However, up until, you know, Monday, my summer casting bites it's been every day. We've been getting fish every day. So,
nice.
It's just kind of a small hiccup in our game plan. But, I mean, things like that's bound to happen when you throw a lot of heat out there and no wind. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and so over there, as far as the way those lakes, I mean, everywhere here too, like a lake will trend certain directions with the muskies. You get, you know, a peak for 5 years, it's great, then it tapers off, and then maybe 10 years down the road it comes back a little bit with more fish. What are you seeing on those lakes that you target over there?
You know, I'm seeing, like, it's all dependent on the DNR, in my opinion. It's okay. Well,
right.
if they're stocking fish at a low density, it's going to be a low density fishery. You know, there will be a peak. You know, there was a peak in, say, like the late 90s, and there was another peak in like 06. You know, you have that peak, but then it just slowly like tapers off a lot of the stock lakes, and that's kind of what we're seeing in Minnesota in general. And it's going to depend on the stocking numbers. If lakes are stocked higher per littoral acres, then you're seeing better fishing. And you talk to the DNR, of course, they don't want to admit that they can stock more fish in specific lakes. For an example, like Lake Bemidji, you know, that lake, I would say it definitely peaked in like the late 90s and throughout maybe like 07, 08. And the numbers just aren't there to where they used to be. And, you know, the DNR is saying, well, you know, it's muskies are territorial and they're not letting like the young muskies come up and there could be cannibalism, and a lot of that just doesn't really make sense to me. And I mean, if you stocked a lake with more fish, and it can handle more fish, you know, they're stocking that lake the same number of fish. They're stocking a lake a third of that size. So, you know. And they're basing on littoral acres, basically stating that muskies don't use more than the water that's deeper than like 12 or 15 feet. Well, that's just ludicrous, because I spend the majority of June in water 30 to 60 to 80 or 100 feet of water. So, you know, their stocking is, criteria is definitely flawed, and it's just not, you know, to say that a muskie only uses a certain depth range is just ludicrous. It makes no sense.
I've never heard of them using that kind of an acreage count for stocking before. It's the first time I'm hearing of that.
Yeah, yeah. So, and you look at like the stocking numbers on Lake Bemidji, and there it's a very, very, very low number. And you know, and I've said this on numerous podcasts and interviews talking about our fisheries up here. And this is just it's kind of a sore sight to see, because you know what it was 10 years ago isn't, you know, it's just totally not where we're at today. It's just a shell of where it was. But so when they do their population assessment, they actually go and they use you know, trap nets, hoop nets, and then they also like shock afterwards to try to get an accurate number of how many fish are in the lake. And they actually go to another lake to do that, which again makes no sense to me. And so they'll go up to Lake Irving, which is where a lot of the muskies, it's just a dirty, it's a dirtier portion of, I guess you could say, a Lake Bemidji. But they'll go and they'll set up all the nets in there, and then they'll say, okay, well, you know, we got these number of muskies in Lake Irving. Well, they're using that Lake Irving information for Lake Bemidji, you know, but they've never stocked Lake Irving. So again, like in my opinion, that's, if you're going to stock Lake Bemidji, then you have to stock the lakes that are joined to Lake Bemidji. You have to stock the chain. You can't just stock the main lake and think that that's going to be fine, because those fish, if I can take a 20-foot ranger and fish all these different lakes, then, you know, a 4-foot fish can surely swim up and down and go from the river sections to all these different lakes. So you know, and then they're taking their samples out of there, out of a different lake than Lake Bemidji. Well, should that even be counted? Because that lake was never even stocked. So, right. You know, their criteria and their basis and everything, in my opinion, you know, it's not as precise as it should be. If you're just stocking Lake Bemidji, well, you know what, then you should only be sampling that lake then. And you shouldn't go to where you go to another lake where you think they spawn, because that makes no sense, because there's going to be resident fish population there, and there's going to be resident fish population in Lake Bemidji. Well, yeah, it's they're counting all those fish in the adjoining lakes, and then they're saying, well, that's how many fish are in Lake Bemidji. Well, they're not even sampled out of that lake. So how can you even say that? And, of course, those lakes were never stocked. So you have lakes, you have a lake downstream, and you have multiple lakes upstream, which all these fish can go to. And you know, I just think their stocking criteria is what is, I would assume that's based on the early 80s or late 70s stocking criteria for muskies, isn't it? I mean, I think their science, their practices has, they definitely improved since then. So why can't you make adjustments to stocking, you know? And I think that's kind of where we're at right now. We're at a lot of local anglers are starting to question, okay, well, why did the fish population all of a sudden just take a nosedive in the last 10 years? And you know, I don't think anybody really has a good answer for it. You know, it does seem, to me, it seems simple enough. Like, well, if you stock more fish, then there would be more muskies there. And in my opinion, you're not going to have 52 to 54 inch muskies going around and eating all the fry and all the yearling muskies are putting in. That makes no sense to me. You know, these are big fish, and they spend the vast majority of their life out over deep water, and they're eating whitefish and tulipies. They're eating tulipies, you know, 14-inch tulipies, and they're eating 20-inch whitefish, and you know, maybe some suckers as well. But they're not spending their time targeting something as
as insignificant as a yearling muskie. So, you know, and that was one of the excuses that I received recently from the DNR. But you know, it's I think you know, in a lot of stock lakes throughout the state, you're seeing those kind of like peaks. You're finally starting to see those gradually come down. So I don't know what the future is going to hold. I do fish a lot of natural lakes. Well, the whole entire cast chain. And with that being said, you know, it's, you catch little fish, you catch big fish, you catch, you know, 45 inch fish. It has more of an equal size distribution than the stock lakes for sure. So,
yeah, the stock lakes tend to go in, you know, you stock it every 15 years. So you do get those gaps. At least that's some of the scheduling I saw over there. Like when Mille Lacs was peaking, I was over there with, you know, guys like Greg Thomas and some of them and Luke and those guys. But everybody was saying, well, there's nothing coming up behind these fish.
Right.
At that time, it was a remnant stocking that led to that peak. And one thing, talking about that diet of these fish, they did a study on the Manitou chain here, which obviously someone could say it's apples and oranges compared to there, but where they were netting these fish later in the season and doing the contents of their stomachs. And it was, I hate to misquote it, but it was something like 75% to 90% soft fin forage, meaning ciscos or suckers. You know, and then that's going on the argument that the muskies are eating all of our walleyes or eating all of our perch. You know, so that kind of did away with that thing. And then as far as with the stocking thing over there, do you think that this is some of that trickle down from that issue you guys were having politically over there with the anti-muskie crowd?
Well, you know, you're going to find a lot of pushback from a handful of individuals that are really good at organizing and have a lot of money. They go around, and if there's a lake that's being proposed, they're going to organize their handful of people. And they're going to sit down and have a meeting with those Lakeshore Association owners, and they're going to basically tell them, hey, they want to put these muskies in your lake, and then they're going to start with their just web of lies. So, you know, and they're really good at contacting the right people to stop things. And it's absolutely insane. It really is. But, you know, that's kind of what happens when politicians are able to get a strong foothold in these type of issues, you know, and scientific issues that really have, they should have nothing to say about it. But when you have armchair biologists that, you know, I've sat in Senate hearings and I've testified in Senate hearings. And I mean, there's people that vote on these bills that don't even know what a northern pike is. And I kid you not, let alone a muskie, you know. And right. You have these people asking these questions. Well, you know, like what is, you know, just general questions about what is a muskie. They have no idea. And they have no idea that people fish for them. And, you know, and they sit on a natural resource and environmental committee that makes decisions on these matters. And, you know, it's a controversial issue. It's, you know, it's something that, that in my opinion shouldn't be controversial when you look at all the facts and the scientific information out there and the studies. But yeah, I mean, there's people that think that muskies eat little kids,
I saw that one.
wood duck eggs. I mean, everything, like they can crawl on top of land for a couple miles and go to the next lake. And I mean, they're like alligators basically.
Well, I thought that was part of the reason that you guys' white-tailed deer count was down, too.
Yeah, there's definitely something to do with that. Yeah. but I want to, like, get back to, you know, like our local areas, specifically like Lake Bemidji.
Right.
I just had one of my friends contact our fisheries manager, and his response basically states that his story is a common one. He did express concern about, you know, I mean, he was up here for 8 days, and I think he caught his boat caught two fish, like a 49.5 and a 45.5, and that was on Lake Bemidji, casting, of course. And, you know, during 10 years ago, you could have caught 7-8 fish and had a couple of 50s, 2 or 3 50s,
right,
during that time. So, and, you know, simultaneously, I was on a natural lake, and of course, that natural lake, we were, you know, catching fish, doing pretty good, getting one or two every day. And he felt pretty discouraged and kind of down in the dumps about it. But, you know, he contacted our fisheries manager, and the fisheries manager basically said that his story is a pretty common one. And that, he brought up an analogy, such as like an old growth forest, a small number of large trees shading out younger trees, preventing most of them from surviving and becoming part of the forest. Well, you know, that's an analogy that I have an issue with, because, you know, the large muskies, without a doubt, will pick and set up on the most, like, the prime pieces of structure in a lake. And then that's kind of, you know, I'm not saying, like, one fish is going to be in a certain spot on an inside turn and that fish is, you know. But that like, an inside turn and something that you think is just the prime piece of structure, that's going to be a big fish spot. And, you know, these big fish, you know, they're going to take up the prime pieces of structure in the lake. However, you know, muskies aren't trees. You're not going to have, like, one fish that's in an area that's, okay, well, a small muskie probably won't go there then. Okay, maybe I agree with that, right? But, you know, they're going to go to secondary spots. They're going to go to just different areas altogether. They're still going to exist in that lake, and then when their time comes, they'll be able to take, you know, take those prime spots when those old fish die. So, you know, like, relating that to an old growth forest is, it really doesn't make sense, because granted they're competing for forage, much like the old growth forest is competing with sunlight, you know, with the smaller trees, but, you know, those trees can't move to find sunlight. Those smaller fish can move to find prey. So,
right.
You know, that's something that I don't really agree with. You know, his analogy there is doesn't make a lot of sense. So, you know, we've had, you know, during that peak, say like 98 or 99 to like 06, you know, we had the peak, and there should be, like a well-established population of fish in the lakes that are stocked at an adequate number. And there is, you look at lakes such as like Plantagenet, Big, Little Wolf, you know, there's a large population of fish there. Not necessarily large, but definitely a fishable population of fish, and you can expect to be able to pattern those fish, and when you have a specific pattern dialed in, you can expect to catch fish. So, you know, and then, you know, the fisheries manager also talked about fishing pressure. I agree, it's definitely increased some. However, if there's a lake that is totally dead, you know, anglers aren't stupid. They're not going to, like, well, most anglers aren't going to beat their head against the wall and fish a lake for 10 days without catching a fish. You know, they're going to move to where there's fish.
Right.
You know, they're going to move to where there's a higher number of fish per acre. So they want to catch fish. They have, you know, a limited time that they can spend on the water, and they're going to go to those lakes. So, yeah. And, you know, I'm looking at his email right now as we speak. So I'm trying to bring up some different points that he brings up and give you my thoughts on that. They don't think that stocking more fingerlings is the answer. And then he does talk about how Lake Bemidji has had consistent stocking for the past 30 years, which is entirely not true. It has not.
Yeah, you wouldn't have a problem if they were doing that.
Yeah. So,
you know, and we've seen it around here now, and again, someone could call it apples and oranges, but where they've over here, they're putting a lot of effort into studying and trying to bring back our walleye fishery up here. Well, one of the things that they've been doing is choosing lakes and then taking the bag limits way down and then stocking advanced fingerlings for a walleye is, I believe, 8 to 10 inches. And we've seen incredible success with that. Now, I think an advanced fingerling in a muskie, I believe, is like 15 to 18 inches. And obviously they cost more, but if one of those fish is worth how many fingerlings, you know, has there been any talk or do they do anything like that over there with advanced fingerlings?
Yeah, you know, I'm not really sure what size they are stocking. But I would assume around 10 to 12 inches.
Okay.
You know, I've been there when they've at different lakes in the fall when they've stocked, and I've seen them everywhere. The access. It's just basically they pull up to an access and they dump them right there.
I have my issues with that type of thing. They do that over here, and I have my issues because there's flocks of seagulls and 20 loons sitting there. It's like you couldn't after all the money you put into raising those fingerlings. You couldn't drop a John boat in and drive for a half mile and dump them at intervals around a down tree or a boathouse or something. That's the same thing that they do here.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, they did that on a lake that I fish, I would say, 5 or 6 years ago. And we were there and right after, you know, within minutes. And, you know, I couldn't load. I had to back the trailer in, say, like an additional like 3 or 4 feet, because all of those fingerlings were hanging out in the area where you power load your boat.
Right.
You know, in that little like dip area, the little washout right there. That it's like 3.5-4 feet depth. So all of them were in that hole. And you know what, like what if somebody came after me that, you know, didn't really care about muskies and said, oh, you know, I'm just gonna power load my boat and maybe, you know, and maybe just I don't really care about what can happen to these fish, you know, and I would assume that half of them would die because there's literally probably 100 fingerlings like in this little hole and hiding under the dock, so which is absolutely senseless. It really is. And I know it seems like, you know, a bash on Minnesota DNR. Okay, well, you know, not necessarily. They've done an absolutely incredible job at establishing what we have today. Without a doubt, it's awesome. You know, we are fortunate to have some stock lakes that are still putting out a lot of big fish and still incredible fisheries and some natural lakes that they manage as well. However, they're not stocking the natural lakes, but those natural lakes are great too. You know, they have to be able to adapt and overcome these issues. Okay. Well, if you think that you know, there's a very low density population on a stock lake and it's it's more or less it's unfishable. How are you going to fix it? I mean, I can't. I don't know what to do. You know, I'm not a biology major. I'm a teacher. I teach kids. You know, and I take people fishing. That's what I do. I know how to do my job. But you know, you can't look at what you did 30 years ago, and you can't expect that. You know, for any job, you can't expect that to work with the changing trends of today. You know, such as like an increase in fishing pressure, and maybe shoreline, you know, degradation and spawning habitat was declining. You know, you have to take so many different factors into effect. And
oh yeah.
So, okay. Well, what are the anglers saying? What is our population assessment saying? Okay, if it says we have 450 fish in a lake that, you know, has maybe 8,000 acres, there's an issue there, you know.
That's
8,000 acres, definitely there's an issue.
Yeah, and I was just going to say that something I should mention. I'm not sitting here on my end ripping the DNR like it sounds like we are. I know that the majority of the people working for the DNR want what's best, and that's why they went into this. They love it. It's just sometimes some of the political stuff from on top comes down, because I actually know guys that they'll tell me one thing and they're like, I can't say that publicly. I have to say this publicly.
Sure. Yeah.
As they're told, yeah. I mean, like our deer managers and all that, I do not envy those guys. They are, you know, they work their asses off, and they're, you know, public enemy number one when there's no deer around, and all that kind of thing. So I understand kind of the way that whole thing shakes down. And then one thing I was going to ask you here, how are the Northerns over there in Bemidji? Because I know that there was, I know, an extreme downward trend whenever last time I talked to you about that a year ago or whatever, that those nice pike weren't being seen anymore. What's the story with that?
Yeah, you know, I don't see them in the last, say, like 15 years. I've noticed a steady decline in size, and specifically looking at Lake Bemidji as a whole, you know, you've seen their size samples and the nets drop dramatically. While it's, you know, people catch and keep a lot of the bigger pike, while those bigger pike mm-hmm. are going to be replaced by multiple smaller pike. So,
right.
Yeah, and you know, pike regulations are definitely a thing that's increasing, and you know, people are starting to look at pike as, okay, well, these like numerous hammer handle pike, they are crushing like early like first of the year perch and you know, fingerling muskies and everything else. So there's going to be, you know, I can see down the road there'll be more just size consideration given the size limits, and you know, in an attempt to get those bigger pike established like they once were. So, you know, I see good things ahead, and the Minnesota Muskie and Pike Alliance is kind of leading the charge on that. So,
yeah, it's something I wish that, and I sound like a broken record on the pike, but if you can get a good established population of big pike, that is like the coolest thing, because they, I mean, for the most part, they eat anything you throw in front of them. They provide a great ice fishing resource, but it's just that whole getting over that it's a trash fish the mentality, and to get some protections on the bigger pike. And something we've also noticed, I was actually talking to Lajewski about this, where it was something we hadn't really thought about, but when we're on good lakes, like a good lake all around, there's a good balance. There's big walleyes, there's big pike, there's big muskies, there's big panfish. It's like if that's so hard to find, where, because someone will get on there, there'll be a guy that'll get on there with groups of 10 in the winter and kill every big northern they catch, and that does not take long to clean that out. And then, like you were saying, then it's full of hammer handles. We had lakes where we were getting 40-inch northerns, and that happened. The guide got on there and just cleaned the thing out. And now, in a day of ice fishing, you'll catch 100 northerns, and maybe five of them are the size that you might want to consider cleaning.
Sure.
And it's, but that balance, you know, those big pike, because everybody thought, well, the big pike compete with the muskies. If we want muskies, we don't want big pike. If we want walleyes, we don't want the muskies. But it'll hit that balance. And I don't know how you do that. I don't know if you can manufacture balance. I mean, certainly try, which it seems that they're not.
Yeah, you know, I think over time with slot limits and enforcement, you know, they'll come back. I would assume they would come back.
Pike in their ship, no problem growing over there in Bemidji. Mm-hmm. My God, they got the room, they got the food. But
right, yeah, absolutely. You know, we opened up spearing to pike on Cass Lake. Gosh, I don't remember how long it's been now. It has to have been maybe 6 or 7, 8 years. Maybe 8. I think it's close to 8 years. So 2010-ish. And, you know, everyone thought, all the harpooners in the state thought that they could go there and spear like a 38-inch northern or a 40, you know, or even bigger, 43. And they got out there, and that just wasn't really the case. There's a lot of fish, like 30 to 35, which indicates like a healthy population of pike. And you know, you didn't see those gigantic like Red Lake type size structures up on Cass Lake, but you know, they lobbied our local politicians. First it was Olson, her name was Olson, Senator Olson, and then, and then that one failed because the chair of the committee was putting special regulations on a lake that he has a cabin on, and there's a lot of controversy to that because he didn't get anybody's approval, and he tried to slide it in, you know, at the last minute. And he lost his seat over it, and thank God that whole bill got tanked. Well, then it came through, and one of our local politicians, Carlson, he put it together, and you know, and in an attempt, you know, I'm sure he was fed lies, you know, and I sat in the Senate hearings too, and I heard all the lies they would spew, but it was mainly regarding the pike spearing and how it's going to rejuvenate the economy of Cass Lake. Well, if you've been to Cass Lake in the last 15 years, you know, there ain't no coming back from that.
I was there last year. I agree.
Yeah. I thought there for a year, and must have been 2010. And, you know, just the overall crime, the poverty, just everything, you know, it just, you can't bring that area back. You know, it's very unfortunate. It really is. But pike spearing did not do anything to help the economy of Cass Lake in the winter. There was a guy that owned a bait shop, and I believe it is closed now, called Froggy's. And
well, someone's going spearing, they're not going to a bait shop.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, what do they need? Like two sucker minnows, you know? So.
Yeah, you're going tip-up fishing.
right. So, you know, he built a bunch of fish houses and spear houses, and from what I understand, he didn't do well. He sold the rentals, and someone else eventually bought them, and they're not even being put out anymore. You're not seeing anybody spearing. And you know, and I don't want to put people's spear in a negative like connotation or anything. I don't want to associate anything with them, but I'm just saying that it is a dying sport. It's gonna die out here in the next. I don't really know if it'll ever die out, but it's just really nobody's doing it.
Well, it's a change in mentality where people want a picture of a 38 to, or a whatever 42 inch, or they want that nice photo on the ice, let the fish go. And in all reality, I love eating northern pike. Now, we are very selective, you know, we'll keep a couple of 22 to 25 inchers here and there. So what's the difference if I'm spearing that fish or if I'm killing it on a tip up? So I'm sure there's plenty of guys that are out there spearing that aren't out there to kill these trophies. You know, and so, yeah, I would actually like to go do it. I think it would be fun, to go and spear a couple eating size fish, you know?
Absolutely. And that's kind of where nobody has a problem with that. Nobody has a problem with spearing some smaller sized fish to eat. Well, you know, one thing that I guess I kind of do have a problem with is spearing the really large fish because, you know what, those people, they don't care, or maybe they just don't even know what that does to an ecosystem. So
right.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I agree. There's like, I mean, the ice fishing here, we need a protection on our bigger pike, and it's just like I've said for years. I mean, the pike are considered a garbage fish, and they're most susceptible during the ice fishing season because they're back up in those weed beds. And, you know, I mean, I think the one bay we fished on the chain here, the one year we had like, a big pike here is over 30 inches. We don't get those giants. I mean, we'll get them up to 38, and then there's the unicorn over 40 that shows up. But we had, it was like 32 or 33 fish over 34 inches that we let all those fish go. And it's like, man, we could have done some damage here if you'd have had the wrong people out here.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you're not seeing the people up here spearing as much in the last 10 years. And it does take a lot of work to do it.
Yes.
And, you know, that it does kind of go a lot, like you were talking, it does go a lot against just the mentality of society now. You don't see those. It's definitely a conservation, more conservation now than it has been in the last 10 years, let alone the last 20 years. So, you know, you're seeing people that want to take care of the resources. So.
Right. Yeah. That's just, I mean, the advent of the camera phone. You know, it's like I forgot my camera at home. Everybody's got a camera, and it just seems that you know, that a nice photo of a nice healthy fish and then being released. You know, there's plenty. I mean, I love to eat fresh fish, and I know that's different than the mentality of a lot of guides over there. I just love it. But there's enough selective harvest. The bluegills are in. We keep some bluegills. The crappies are in. We keep some bluegills. We get on a little walleye bite. We get the pike through the ice. You move it around, and there's plenty of room for that if you're selective and you let those spawning fish go. You take the smaller males. There's nothing wrong with that, and I encourage that. It's extremely healthy, and it's just great for the lake, too, because you're taking the smaller males out and allowing room for the females to grow, a lot of stuff like that. So it is a positive thing if it's done the correct way.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, and you're not seeing a lot of people that take pictures anymore of speared pike, and, you know, on the ends of spears and posting those all over social media, because just really, you're going to probably catch some crap for it. You're like, oh, you speared that. It's upside down. You know, it's like shaped in an upside down U on top of your spear, and it just doesn't really look good, you know. I don't know. So,
right.
You know, all
right, well,
obviously, all fish die no matter what happened. You know, all fish, I shouldn't say that, all fish, you know, fish that you intend to harvest, they do die, and some do it in kind of on the end of the spear, I guess. And, you know, others, you throw in a live well and you just fillet them out. And yeah.
Right.
But yeah, those big pike definitely should be protected. Small pike. Yeah. There's increased harvest numbers on a lot of lakes in Minnesota to hopefully combat that. Yeah.
Anyway. Okay. Well, I had posted a thing on Facebook that I was doing a podcast with you. I want to get some questions from the public. So let's blow through these. Okay. It's, any new hot baits this year for you?
Any new hot baits, did you say? Okay.
Yeah. Yep, hot lures, hot baits.
No. Nothing that really sticks out. I'm catching fish on kind of a lot of the standard stuff. Okay, there is one bait that I will talk about. That I've done really well with this year. And that was, it's a prototype that's, coming out next year in 2019 from Kramer Tackle. It's going to be something, along the lines of an inline blade bait. But I can't give too much information away.
Okay.
But it's going to shine. It's going to shine, especially in my opinion, it's going to shine at night, and we've done really well at night, on actually pressured lakes, on pressured and low density lakes such as Lake Bemidji with it. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what will happen next year when people start to use it. So yeah, for sure. Just, you know, that one in particular I guess that one's taking center stage in my night lineup. So, Kramer prototype. Yeah. But, that's about
nice.
All I can say for that. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Those, my Kramer guys and yeah, it's cool seeing how this stuff keeps turning over where you got your, Kramer guys, you know, Lake X guy. It's just cool seeing these guys, you know, it's like you think you can't reinvent the wheel and then, you know, something, comes about that's like, yeah, very cool.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. It's something, you know, it's something different. It's something that Mike's, you know, Mike's a genius. He thinks about the way that everything works, the mechanics, of blades and everything else. So he's always thinking,
right.
He's thinking of different ways or different things that he can develop to still kind of use a blade bait but make it different, basically. So he's a good guy. He never calls me back, which I've got issues with that. So Mike, if you're listening, you need to call me.
Yeah, he hangs around with Brad Hoppy a lot now.
Hard. Right, yeah. Very hard guy to get a hold of, so
he calls me all the time. It's probably just you.
Yeah, just probably an ass. For sure.
Okay, then I've got one of your nemesis is Scotty Thomas actually wants to know what is in your diet? What is your diet for staying so ripped?
Oh, you know, I do a – it's pretty basic. It's a low-carb diet, I guess. A lot of lean meat, a lot of chicken, turkey, grass-fed and finished beef. And I don't really do any processed carbs. I do like sweet potatoes and rice. And, you know, I don't really do breads.
Mm-hmm.
And I eat quite a bit. I eat maybe 5 meals a day. So
yep.
when I'm out on the boat, I'm always eating usually. And I don't,
nice.
Also I don't drink, I don't drink, I don't, yeah, I guess as a musky guy, I don't really have time to drink, you know, so.
Well, I still like, I don't worry about that. But,
yeah,
And then let's see what else, Scotty had a whole list of freaking questions here that I'm not even going to go into. And then we've got, one that says, what is your favorite Adam Sandler movie?
Oh, Adam Sandler movie. Oh, these are like legit questions people are asking.
Yes.
Right. I would say Big Daddy.
Okay.
Although don't interpret that as my interaction with my students that I teach, but yeah, that's a pretty, pretty cool movie. I like it.
Nice. Have you ever seen, what's the name of that one? Yeah, one he did with Adam Sandberg. I'm drawing a blank here. And Vanilla Ice was in it. Shit, can't remember it. I'll have to get back on that one. But another question here. You maybe have any the plans or desire to maybe be a trail team on the PMTT?
Not really. You know,
No.
I want to focus on. I'm kind of a homebody. I like to stay around here. I don't like to travel much. I like to sleep in my own bed at night, you know, and I just don't want to travel, I guess. But, I did fish the PMTT, last year, and with Andy Grimm, he actually fished Eagle River alone, and he did well. We went to Cass. I think we got seventh on Cass. And then we went to Minnetonka for the championship. And I think we seventh in the championship. We did catch a fish on the last day. But as far as doing the entire trail, it's not something I really want to do. I love my lakes. I love going up the Lake of the Woods, more importantly, I do like sleeping in my own bed. So, yep. I'm pretty blessed with having so many great lakes within a 25-minute drive of my house. So,
gotcha. Yeah. And then, Scotty also asks, what happens after the muskie shows? And we'll save that for a different time because I got to get going here. But that's something you can do on if you want to write up a synopsis on what happens after the muskie shows. We can touch on that sometime later. But anyway, all right, well, hang on the line for a second. Hey, thanks, everybody, for tuning in. As always, with Kevin Cochran, it's a good one. So everybody take care, and we will see you soon. Out.
We heard about it. We understand that Jay is excited about, his new weapons, but the same old Jay.